Are you looking for a way to save a little money? What about getting your subscriptions under control? If so, then I've got just the solution for you. Rocket Money. With the help of Rocket Money, I was able to find a subscription that I completely forgot to cancel before the free trial was up. I'm sure you've all been there. And Rocket Money can help me cancel it. Between streaming platforms, apps, delivery services, and even parenting and kids subscriptions, it's hard to keep track of exactly what you're spending and how much it all adds up to each and every month. Not to mention the fact that it seems every single day one of those subscriptions suddenly jumps up in price. Rocket Money alerts you when this happens so you're never caught unawares. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps you lower your bills so that you can grow your savings. With them, I can see clearly what my monthly spending is and how it compares to the month before, making saving money and taking control over my finances so much easier. They'll also try to negotiate lowering your bills up to 20%. All you have to do is submit a picture of your bill, and Rocket Money takes care of the rest. They'll even deal with customer service for you. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has saved a total of $500 million in canceled subscriptions, saving members up to $740 a year when using all of the app's features. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/morningcup. That's rocketmoney.com/morningcup. rocketmoney.com/morningcup. Hey guys, I have a podcast that I think you'll really enjoy. Proof, the investigative true crime podcast co-hosted by Susan Simpson of Undisclosed and Jacinda Davis of Evil Lives Here, is releasing its highly anticipated second season, where they investigate the murder of 18-year-old Renee Ramos. The first season, which if you haven't listened to yet, you totally should, saw the release of two Georgia men serving life sentences for murdering their friend, Brian Bowling. And thanks to evidence unearthed by Proof, on December 8th, 2022, both Daryl Lee Clark and Kane Joshua Story were finally freed after 25 years behind bars. With that same investigative drive, Susan and Jacinda are on the case again, and this time, they are on the streets of Manteca, California, to find out who really killed Renee Ramos. In Proof, Murder at the Warehouse, you hear how, on June 5th, 2000, Renee's body was found buried beneath a pile of debris inside a new Home Depot building, and how, despite tips hinting at alternate suspects, her boyfriend, 18-year-old Jake Silva, and 33-year-old Ty Lopez were arrested and convicted of her murder. Fans of true crime and investigative series won't want to miss this riveting new season. Follow the case as Susan and Jacinda uncover long-overlooked evidence about what really happened to Renee by listening to Proof, Murder at the Warehouse, wherever you get your podcasts.
There were two more murders 15 miles away.
When police arrived, they found the telephones and electricity lines.
We have a weird homicide.
A scene described by one investigator as reminiscent of a weird...
Morning.
Cup of murder.
Some people aren't meant to protect and serve. On April 30th, 1971, a young woman was born who had dreams of becoming a police officer. Dreams she achieved, but then used to commit a truly terrible crime. So if you like your coffee hot, but your bones chilled, sit back and start your day with a morning cup of murder. Antoinette Renee Frank, born April 30th, 1971, was said to have a troubled childhood from the time she was small. However, despite all that she was put through and dealt with, the young girl dreamed of becoming a police officer. Something she was able to make into a reality in early 1993 when she applied to the New Orleans Police Department. Now, according to author Chuck Hustmeyer, Antoinette, in order to secure her long-held dream, lied on several sections of her employment application, was caught, and failed two standard psychiatric evaluations with the psychiatrist advising against her hiring. Though this knocked her out of the running the first go-around, Antoinette got a second chance to apply and was officially hired on February 7th, 1993, and graduated from the academy on the 28th. You might be wondering how someone deemed unfit for hiring managed to get a job. Well, you see, at this time, the NOPD was chronically shorthanded, and officers were paid less than in similar-sized cities. This, understandably, caused many officers to leave their job, and the department found itself losing employees faster than they could replace them. Then several arrests for murder and drug activity decimated their ranks, and many who wished to join the force were barred from doing so due to a requirement that all officers be residents of New Orleans, a rule that didn't change until 2014. So between all of this and their belief that hiring more Black officers, like Antoinette Frank, might ease the long-standing racial tensions in the city, the young woman was finally able to live out her dreams despite the red flags. Though she graduated near the top of her academy class, Antoinette's time with the NOPD was reportedly unremarkable, with many officers claiming she was shy, was unaware of what police work truly entailed, and lacked the decisiveness to be a good police officer. She also had a pretty wicked temper and at times exhibited some irrational behavior. Though her superiors wanted her to go back to the academy for some further training and being frequently placed on supervisory review, Antoinette kept her job and, noting the work she did in the community, the Kiwanis Club awarded her their Officer of the Month. Now, while she was barely coasting by at her job, on November 25th, 1994, a little under a year after becoming a police officer, Antoinette Frank handled an incident in which a known drug dealer, Rogers Lacaze, was shot and injured. Later believed to be the first known contact between the pair, though she herself would later dispute this, while taking Rogers' statement, Antoinette allegedly became smitten with his, quote, bad boy persona, and before long, the couple began a sexual relationship. Well aware that this could jeopardize her career, Antoinette kept seeing Rogers, and on a few separate occasions, the known criminal was seen at scenes of accidents and complaint calls, where he was introduced as either a trainee or as her 18-year-old nephew. And, according to some testimonies, the pair would use her squad car to pull over and rob passing motorists. Though she was later cagey about the nature of her relationship with Rogers, when later asked why she would involve herself with a man that she knew was involved in dealing drugs and a shooting, she said that she would not disassociate herself from him simply because of his past. Over the course of their contact with one another, Antoinette, about 6 years his senior, purchased the teenager a cell phone, expensive clothing, and rented him a new Cadillac, while also allowing him to go on calls with her and drive her patrol car while she was working. One such call occurred on February 4th, 1995, when Rogers reportedly jumped out of her car with a 9mm pistol in hand and threatened the life of a man he had gotten into an argument with at a party earlier that night. The men involved, John Stevens and Anthony Wallace, later testified that, as they were leaving a party, John and Rogers got into some sort of argument, and Anthony suggested that they leave before things escalated. They did exactly that, got into their car, and drove several blocks before noticing the lights of a police car signaling for them to pull over. That's when a female police officer, Antoinette Franks, stepped out of her car and told the men to get out and come around back behind the vehicle. They did as they were told, but as they rounded the corner, they noticed that the man who they left at the party, Rogers Lacaze, was standing there pointing a gun at them. According to John, Anthony suddenly rushed Rogers, and the two men began fighting before both he and the police officer joined in. That's when the gun went off and John began running. Grabbed by another man, along with Rogers, Antoinette, in uniform, told the man that Lacaze was the good guy and that it was Anthony who started the whole altercation. He was restrained until backup arrived and was arrested and charged with attempted murder and armed robbery. Another testimony, this time by Irving Bryant, a civil sheriff at the time, stated that on the evening of February 4th, he saw a stopped police vehicle with its lights on and assumed the officer was simply making a traffic stop. But when he got closer, Irving saw two Black men fighting on the side of the road, and then one, Anthony Wallace, suddenly broke away and picked up the 9mm semi-automatic weapon from the ground. Now involved himself, Irving Bryant ordered Anthony to drop the gun. He did so immediately, and he was restrained. But suddenly, Rogers Lacaze lunged towards him. He, too, was grabbed, and that's when Antoinette informed the sheriff that Rogers was with her and ordered that he be released. Despite his involvement, Irving Bryant was never questioned by the police about the bizarre incident and never gave them any formal statement. Exactly 1 month later, Antoinette Frank and Rogers Lacaze would show up at another location together and this time take the lives of 3 individuals. According to the sources, just after midnight on March 4th, 1995, Chau Vu, a member of the Vietnamese-American family who owned the Kim An restaurant in New Orleans, looked outside and noticed that a battered red and white Ford Torino had just pulled into their parking lot for the 3rd time that night. Later saying that she, quote, just had a feeling that something wasn't right, the driver exited the vehicle, and she noted that it was 24-year-old Antoinette Frank. The off-duty NOPD officer who, sometimes, worked extra security detail at the restaurant. Dressed in casual clothing, Antoinette, who had already been to the restaurant twice since her patrol shift ended at 11 p.m., bringing along her 18-year-old, quote, nephew, Rogers, on the second trip, tugged at the door and tried to get inside, but noticed that the doors were locked. Now, it was around this time that Chow, after counting that evening's earnings, walked into the dining room to pay Ronald A. Williams II, a colleague of Antoinette's, who was working security that night to supplement his salary. Seeing Antoinette and getting that sense of worry, she ran into the kitchen to try and hide the money. As she did so, Antoinette produced the key that she had stolen during one of her previous visits, walked into the restaurant, passed Ronald Williams, and then pushed Chow, her brother Quok, and another restaurant employee into the doorway of the kitchen. Ronald quickly got up to figure out what was going on, and when he did, Rogers Lacaze slipped in behind him and shot him in the back of the neck, severing his spinal cord and instantly paralyzing the married father of 2, Ronald fell to the ground, and Rogers then shot him in the head and back. When Antoinette turned to see what her partner in crime had done, Chow grabbed her brother and tried to find somewhere in the restaurant to hide. With all 3 hunkering down in the rear of the large walk-in cooler inside the kitchen, turning out the lights to try and protect themselves further, Chow and Quok, overcome by fear, realized that they had no clue where their other sister and brother, Ha and Chong Vu, were. The last they had seen them, they were sweeping the floor in the dining room. Chow, seeing very little from her hiding spot, was able to watch as Antoinette began searching the kitchen for something. Then, as she moved out of her line of vision, Chow heard the sounds of more gunshots as Antoinette came back into the kitchen, looking in the usual spot where the Vu family kept their money. They then heard the duo screaming at Ha and Chung, demanding the money, but unfortunately, neither had any clue where their sister had hidden the stash. Antoinette then began beating 17-year-old Chung with her pistol before finally finding the money hidden in the microwave. She then shot 21-year-old Ha Vu as she knelt on the ground, pleading for her life. Chung Vu was then shot 6 times before Antoinette Frank and Rogers Lacaze left the scene. Chow frantically tried calling 911 from her hiding spot, but found that they had no signal. Eventually, Quok emerged from the cooler and ran out the back door to a friend's nearby home to finally call the authorities. While they reported the murder of their siblings and the man who worked to keep them safe, Antoinette dropped Rogers off at a nearby apartment complex just as her portable police radio went off saying that an officer was down at the Kim An restaurant. Borrowing a patrol car, Antoinette returned to the scene, posing as a responding officer with the intent of killing the witnesses that she left behind. Parking at the rear of the restaurant, she entered through the back door and made her way into the kitchen, where Chow Vu was waiting at the front door for help to arrive. Antoinette identified herself as a police officer, but Chow, immediately recognizing the woman who killed her siblings, told her that she knew what she had done and bolted out the front door and straight into the safety of responding officers. She immediately told them who was responsible for the murders, and everyone was brought back into the restaurant for questioning. Later, as the investigation progressed, officials found out that, the day before the murders, Antoinette Frank tried to purchase some 9mm ammunition from a local Walmart, claiming that, as a police officer, there was nothing wrong with purchasing the ammunition. She also said that she and Rogers Lacaze were not dating nor intimate and refused to discuss anything regarding the murders, simply stating in response to questions to, quote, look it up in the record or assert her innocence. According to the homicide detective working the case, Eddie Rance, he believed the couple planned the robbery to get revenge on Ronald Williams, who Antoinette allegedly believed was shortchanging her on her hours and pay at the restaurant and wanted revenge. He later described her as the most cold-hearted person he'd ever encountered in his 3 decades as an officer. She was that same night arrested and charged with 3 counts of first-degree murder, while Rogers was arrested and charged a little later that night. She later confessed to the charges, as did Rogers, and Antoinette is believed to be the first New Orleans officer to have ever been charged with killing a fellow officer. Indicted by a grand jury on April 28, 1995, their trials were severed, and Rogers was the first to enter the courtroom. He was found guilty as charged and sentenced to death. Antoinette was brought to trial on September 5th, and in front of the same judge, her attorneys, though subpoenaing 39 witnesses, never called a single soul to the stand. And just 7 days later, and after 22 minutes of deliberation, a jury found her guilty on all counts. And on October 20th, she was sentenced to death. While sitting in prison awaiting her potential execution date, investigators began looking a little further into Antoinette Frank's life and noticed that in 1993, her father was staying at her home and suddenly was reported missing. In November of 1995, a month after she received her sentence, police dogs led officers to a human skull with a bullet hole buried under Antoinette's home. However, according to Chuck Hustmeyer, quote, as for those human bones unearthed beneath Frank's house, so far, authorities have made no serious effort to identify him. The 10-year-old case, they say, remains under investigation. In October of 2006, Antoinette's lawyers argued before the Louisiana Supreme Court that her death sentence should be overturned because she was denied state-funded experts to help prepare for the sentencing phase of her trial, arguing that they needed to conduct, quote, an investigation into the defendant's background for possible mitigating evidence. They introduced the testimony of psychiatrists who said that possible traumatic events of her childhood could have affected her behavior at the time of the murders and that she might be suffering from PTSD. However, a psychiatrist retained by the state disagreed and instead sided with the diagnosis of narcissistic personality disorder with antisocial tendencies given by the doctors at the Louisiana Correctional Institute for Women. In 2007, the Supreme Court ruled in favor of her death penalty being upheld. A death warrant was officially signed on April 22, 2008, and a date for her lethal injection was set for July 15th. In May, however, the Louisiana Supreme Court issued a 90-day stay of execution pending ongoing appeals. On September 11th, a new death warrant was issued and a new date set for December 8th, 2008. But in another ruling, the state Supreme Court effectively voided the warrant while her lawyers attempted to have Judge Marullo, the one who signed both warrants, removed from her ongoing post-conviction appeals on the grounds of bias, saying that he already signed off on her death twice. He was not taken off. More appeals were launched. The judge later recused themselves due to the fact that his signature allegedly appeared on the order authorizing Antoinette to take the murder weapon from the evidence room, which he claimed was forged. On July 23rd, 2015, Roger Lacaze's conviction was thrown out and a new trial was ordered after they found that a man serving on the jury previously worked as a railroad policeman. And in December of 2019, he was resentenced to life imprisonment without parole. Both he and Antoinette are still in prison, and she is the only woman on the state's death row. She and her team still fight for a new sentence, but she is still, as of now, awaiting her potential execution. In 2023, her bid for clemency was denied. Thank you for joining me in my morning cup of murder. Please join me again tomorrow to hear a terrible thing happened on May 1st. Don't forget to rate and subscribe and let me know how you like it. If you want to help support the podcast, there's always Patreon or just sharing it with your true crime obsessed friends. And remember, stay safe.